supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a technique we talk about every once in a while, but we've really not gone into detail. And it's so important. It's called the stale seed bed, and it is your path to a summer of enjoying your garden instead of pulling rogue plants out of it. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Zakia, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Zakia. Am I even close on your name?
No, you got it perfectly, Zakia.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Where are you?
I live in Pottstown, PA.
Okay, I know where that is. What can we do for Zakia in Pottstown?
Well, I had a pretty bad accident last year. And by the time the end of the garden season, I wasn't able to really tend to our garden or plants. And we had about 6 plots. So now I'm trying to figure out the best way to raise our garden beds so that whether I'm working in a chair or a wheelchair, there won't be much bending over or problems.
Right. So you're going to either be in a wheelchair or need to be sitting down.
Yes.
Okay. And you do have some help with some things, I'm hoping.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just the bending over or standing, as long as I need to tend to our plants, would be a problem.
Yes. Well, it is for me, too. And you know, it's just age at this point. I have been, over the years, recommending more and more what I'm calling tabletop gardening. There's so many gardens that are opening up in places where they want to teach, where they want to be fully accessible, where they want to have elderly come in or just differently abled people. And a lot of times the first thought is, well, we'll just build our garden beds up, you know, like 3 feet high. And that becomes structurally difficult. It becomes really expensive. And I think it's unnecessary. I think what makes a lot more sense is to find the right level table. And these just need to be tables that can be outside in the weather. And they would be at exactly the right height so that somebody in a regulation wheelchair, and we know these are all regulation heights, you know, their arms would be right on top of the table. You know, maybe the table would be a little bit lower than that. And then on the table, you would have planters. You would have rectangular planters that fit the outside of the table, and you can grow salad greens, you can grow spinach, you can grow low-growing flowers, you can grow eggplants, you could grow zucchini and cucumbers and pepper plants. Really, the only thing you'd need to still have in ground would be full-sized tomato plants. But if you like, for instance, cherry tomatoes or small tomatoes, they work great in containers. And you could just have a normal size container and then just let the plant cover the table. And you could roll around and harvest all that you like. I think that is the answer, rather than trying to figure out how you're going to use these in-ground plots. I think, at least for the time being, you drop structures in on top of them and grow on top of that.
Okay. Now, then the only question with that would be how deep would I need to have my planters?
Well, I do this myself at my potting benches. I'm assembling these things. And I go, you know, I'm in garden centers all the time, and I see a lot of these long, rectangular, plastic containers that I guess would be easily adaptable as window boxes. And I guess they're about 8 inches to a foot deep. And they're going.
Oh, and that's all I need for most plants?
Well, I mean, can you think of anything that you're growing that something like this wouldn't accommodate?
Well, I had wondered what I would do with carrots and beets.
Oh, carrots and beets, yeah. I mean, you try to get a nice rectangular container that's, say, a foot deep, and you'd put no soil in it whatsoever. You'd fill it with soil-free mix, like Pro-Mix, a lot of perlite, and some compost. You would have the straightest carrots. You would have the best-looking beets. They'd be so big because they didn't have to grow against nasty clay soil or waterlogged soil. They would grow much faster, much easier for you to harvest them, and I wouldn't worry about them bottoming out. Vegetables seem to know when they're in containers, and they adapt their size to the size of the container.
Oh, well, this is great news. Thanks a lot. I'm really looking forward to trying this now.
All right, you take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Skip, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you today?
I am just fine. Skipper, how are you?
I'm doing well from Boone, North Carolina.
Up in the hills.
Yeah.
I know Boone really well. That is one of the most magnificent places in the world to be when the native rhododendrons are in bloom.
It sure is, and the native azaleas as well.
But, you know, the rhodies are like, they elbow the poor little azaleas out of the way when they're in full flower.
It's true, though, but, yeah, we have great rhodos up here.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And people don't understand, there's giant forests of them with, I believe, boardwalks over top because they've grown so thick on the forest floor, you can't walk through them or see them until you're on top of them.
That's true.
No, and it's just amazing. You think of a giant, impenetrable fortress like that that's nothing but blooms.
It's true.
All right, what can we do for Skip in beautiful Boone?
Well, I have a gigantic pussy willow that is in full bloom, I guess is what you call it, this time of year.
Yes.
But it is like 25 feet high, and it's way out of control. So
right.
I was wondering if you could tell me how to trim it, because I did look on the A to Z, but I didn't see anything.
Well, first of all, these are great plants to allow to go to flower. These and witch hazel are two of the very earliest plants to bloom.
Well, that's funny, man. I have a witch hazel right next to it that I was going to kind of ask you about as well.
Well, these are desperately important plants, especially if you have a garden, because they feed and attract beneficial insects and pollinators early in the season. In your area, there are native bees and beneficial insects that are already active. You've probably also noticed the pest insects like the gnats and springtails on warm days. But the creatures that gather at the top of the pussy willow and the witch hazel are all tremendously beneficial, and they need a food source very early in the season. So these are great plants to grow. You kind of stake a claim to all the good insects in your neighborhood right away. If nobody else is growing these plants, you get all the early pollinators and beneficials, and they're just worth $1 million.
Nice.
So you always, you know, these are spring-blooming plants, so the rules are dirt simple. You let them finish blooming. And then one nice thing about the pussy willows, if you have the basic Q-tip type, is when you prune them, you harvest these kind of cut flowers that many people like after all those Q-tips are formed. Then the basic rule is you may cut back one third of the plant.
Okay.
In other words, you can take off a third of the plant. And because this is one of the most vigorous regrowers in all of nature, you can lean a little bit more towards 40%. And you can take it from wherever you want. It's not going to make any difference. The only difference is if you cut the thing down to a stump, then you'll have small branches coming out of a stump after that. So you want to take off, you know, full-size branches. You want to do things that are going to shape it the way you want it. But the bottom line is you would not kill it. You could probably take off well over half of the plant. And you would not kill it, but it would not look good in the future after that.
Right.
So pick the third you want to be done with, or you want to trim back, or you want to shape. And then obviously display that tremendous bounty of pussy willows and do the exact same thing for the other spring blooming plants in your landscape, the witch hazel and the azaleas and the rhododendrons when they're done. After they're finished flowering, you can take off up to a third of the plant. And that is the perfect time to do it, right after they're flowering. That's when they have the most strength and energy. And they actually enjoy a good haircut. It's said to improve the blooming the following year.
Okay, great.
All right, man?
Fantastic. Buddy, you're awesome. I love the show. I appreciate you taking me on the air here.
Well, I am, and we appreciate your calling.
All right.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and alert gardeners who want to grow their own greens that now is the time to start lettuce and spinach seeds indoors for transplanting outside at the end of the month. Yes, for most of us, the soil will still be too cold for seed germination then. But cool weather plants like lettuce and spinach don't mind the chill. In fact, it keeps them nice and sweet, like me. But don't go looking up the correct way to start those seeds in our Garden Answers A to Z section just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to spend next summer eating your garden veggies instead of pulling weeds. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, do you enjoy tilling your garden soil, loosening it up, getting it fresh every year? Well, then you are the biggest cause of your own weed woes. You are planting weeds. Yes, you are. We'll tell you how you're doing that, how to avoid it, and the technique that gets rid of all the weeds in the spring when we get to the stale seed bed in the question of the week. In the meantime, we're taking lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Betty, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Betty. Where are you?
I'm in Erdenheim, Pennsylvania. It's nestled between Chestnut Hill and Flower Town, if we know where that is.
Well, I think of it more as being like a central part of the Brandywine Valley and fabulous horse country.
It is, and thank you for saying that. Thank you for upping our our auntie here.
All right. What can we do for Betty in Erdenheim?
Well, Mike, I think we're approaching our third summer of, I think they're called cicada wasps. They're these giant things. They look like little fuzzy drones. And they don't seem to bother people. But every time we start to hear our first cicadas, the wasps appear. And what they tend to do is dig perfectly round holes in our backyard, and they make mounds of dirt from these holes, and then they'll go into the trees, I'm assuming, bring down a cicada, and we've watched this happen. It's very educational, and they will kill the cicada. I think they lay their eggs in the cicada, and then they pull it down the hole. Now, I have no problems with the wasps, but they have made our grass very uneven, and they seem to be increasing with each summer. And I notice now that there is, well, at the end of the summer, that there is a rather large semicircle of dead grass on top of where these wasps burrow. And I would like to know how to discourage them from coming back.
It might be a false trail. Did you try to lift up the grass in the fall?
I did not.
Yeah. That if this happens again, and this is something that everyone should do, if you notice a big patch of grass dying in late summer, early fall, just see if you can lift it up like a carpet, because that's indicative of lawn grub damage, Japanese beetle and rose chafer and June beetle grubs. Their feeding is voracious. The grubs only feed in the late summer, early fall, and they'll create dead patches of grass because they'll have eaten the root system. But when you lift up the carpet, you can see the grubs feeding, so you know exactly what's going on. That doesn't sound like cicada wasp damage, but you've got their life cycle down almost perfectly. These are some of the largest wasps in North America. They do not sting humans. They are only interested in cicadas. And interestingly enough, as large as these wasps are, you've seen the cicadas are two or three times their size.
It's amazing.
What happens is, you're absolutely correct, the wasp will fly into the tree, find a cicada, sting it, paralyze it, fly it to the ground, and in the words of Monty Python, sometimes they do not so much fly as plummet, and then drag it over to the hole, lay her eggs inside the cicada's body, and then bury it so that her children will have food when they emerge. It's a bad day for the cicada. And these are miracles of nature. They are harmless, but a lot of times they will appear in large numbers. And oddly enough, your response to this should be indirect. We're going to fix your lawn so that cicadas and grubs don't find it attractive anymore. Who cuts your lawn?
The guy who comes to cut my lawn.
Okay. You have to talk to him. No shorter than 3 inches ever.
Okay.
That's going to give you a healthier lawn with a better root system. That may alone solve the problem.
Yeah.
Now, who feeds your lawn?
Nobody.
Nobody ever?
Nobody ever.
And are the clippings returned to the lawn at least?
Yes.
Okay. I would like you to put a gentle feeding of a nice organic fertilizer, a corn gluten meal or compost on the lawn in the spring, and then be prepared to put down a bigger feeding of a natural substance in the fall. Returning the cuttings to the lawn is good. That provides half the food the lawn needs, but we need your lawn to build up a healthy root system. Cicada wasps are known for laying their eggs in lawns that are cut too low and that are not cared for correctly. But only two feedings, just spring and fall. No food in the summertime.
Okay.
Cut your lawn at 3 inches. Give it a gentle feeding in the spring, a good feeding in the fall. This summer, obviously, you're going to have some wasp action back. But if you do that for a full season, they're not going to come back next year. They're going to go find less greener pastures, and you're going to have a much better-looking lawn.
That's terrific. I didn't want to hurt them. I just wanted to find someplace else to go.
That's exactly the correct reaction. You're a good person. And this really won't cost you anything. I'm sure your lawn is being cut too short, and you're going to have a much nicer swath of grass to look at. And they'll still be alive somewhere. They'll just go do this in the woods where they're used to doing it.
That's where they probably should be.
All right, Betty?
Hey, Mike, thank you so much.
All right, give a carrot to the horses for me.
You betcha.
All right, take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Michael. Nice name you got there.
Yeah, it works.
Where are you, man?
I'm in Centerville, Ohio, just south of Dayton.
Oh, okay. Ooh, man, people there are excellent listeners. We get so many calls and emails from the Dayton area. It's great.
Oh, we have a great radio station here.
Oh, give them a shout out. Do you know their call letters?
Yeah, WYSO.
All right. Yeah, Yellow Springs, right?
Yep, you got it.
Okay, yeah, good friends of mine. All right, what can we do for Michael just south of Dayton?
I was listening to your show last week. You were talking about lighting for seed starting and how important that is.
Right.
And I'm a local organic market grower here.
Good for you.
Here in Dayton. And one of your callers mentioned that she was using or recommended TH instead of the old big T12 fat fluorescence that we all used to use.
Right.
And I took issue with you on that because I use T5s. That's the newest type of fluorescent.
When I first started starting seeds, I did not like plant lights. Right away, I could tell. I felt they were too dim. And there were a lot of people who were recommending just get a 2 or 4 bulb shop light that had 4 foot long bulbs and keep the tops of the plants very close to the bulbs because fluorescent light is cool. And I had great success with that. And for what? I mean, I started starting seeds in like before 1980. So I guess for 20 years, the coating on those bulbs was T and the number 12. And like you say, they were kind of big fat bulbs. But as newer fixtures evolved and things got more energy efficient, and I believe as mercury started to be greatly reduced in these bulbs, we went down to skinny bulbs, and bulbs that are noticeably skinnier called T8s. And they've worked very well for me as well. But I have to be honest and say that when last time I went to the store, I bought a case of T12s and T8s enough to put new bulbs in my fixtures every seed starting season, still for 2-3 years beyond this. So I haven't been to that section of a store. I don't know from T5s.
Well, you might have a hard time finding the T5s in your regular box or hardware store. They're really skinny. They're 32 watts. I use 4-bulb fixtures that only draw about 1.8 amps per fixture, which isn't much. And they're so bright you can hardly look at them.
Really?
And, of course, they don't. Really. Well, I have 24 of these fixtures that I run because I grow a lot of plants. I grow plants for sale. So I'm running 24 of those fixtures.
Right.
In my greenhouse setup right now with heat mats and all of that. And they are excellent. You can get them right down on the plant. They're absolutely brilliant, long life bulbs. And when you buy these fixtures, they always come with the high Kelvin temperature, which is what you need for leaf growth.
Right. Now, we are talking about 4 foot long bulbs, right?
4 foot long, right. The 2-footers are just too short.
I got an email after that question of the week that the people were shocked to find that prices had increased dramatically just on the T8s. Are the T5s expensive early on?
The T5s are a little expensive. You're going to pay about $125 for a 4-bulb, 4-foot fixture. It comes with the bulbs.
Yeah, but what about when you just have to buy the bulbs?
You know what? I've been using them for over 2 years now, and I haven't had a bulb go out.
Oh, okay, and you're not of the feeling that you need to start with fresh tubes every year.
No, they stay brilliant. I think the tubes are about maybe $7-8 a piece.
Okay, but so that's That's very reasonable for seed starting. Well, certainly if anybody is thinking of starting their own seeds and they don't have equipment yet, your recommendation would be don't even think a half a thought. Go out and start with these new T5s because they don't sound that expensive in terms of startup costs, and I'm sure the energy savings and the luminosity are both immense.
Well, they're fantastic.
Well, and obviously you're a pro, so this is great news. The whole lighting systems are changing daily, and you and I both know that LEDs are coming up fast on the rail, and we're going to be needing to take real good looks at those in the next couple of years as the prices come down.
But you're absolutely right in guiding people towards lighting. In the old days, back in the 70s, when I tried to start plants on a windowsill, it was horrid.
Oh, yeah.
Leggy, they'd fall over.
It is the place where I think seed starters trying out for the first couple of years really fail. All right, Michael. Thanks very much. We'll keep a close eye on this topic. Thanks very much for bringing us up to speed.
You're welcome. Thanks for talking to me. I hope everybody has good luck with their plants.
You too, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Marlene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for making it, Marlene. Where are you?
Michael, I want to just give you a little background, my background. I've been gardening for 50 years, and I've planted at least 100 trees and shrubs all over the country when we have moved. And I've propagated my own roses and my shrubs and my grow my own seedlings and so on and so forth. And I think I kind of qualify as an experienced gardener. But I do have a problem that has me baffled, and I can't find anyone who can solve it.
Okay.
Four years ago, in this new home, which we just retired to, I planted 4 Blue Ray blueberries on the south side of my house, about 3 feet from the foundation. I decided to use them kind of as shrubs.
Right.
They were all the same size, planted in the same size hole, the same topsoil and peat moss, mulching, feeding, et cetera, et cetera. They are now in ascending sizes. The first one's 4.5 feet to 5 feet. The second one is 3 feet. The third one is 2.5 feet. And the fourth one is weeny little, barely a foot. Now, the first one started producing really well last summer, and the second one is doing pretty good. But I cannot understand why they're growing at that rate.
Now, Marlene, where are you located now?
East of Clearfield.
In Pennsylvania?
Yeah. We're probably 35 miles northwest of State College.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good. Yeah, we just went on the air in State College, is my understanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I planted blueberries at the last house I was in, and they grew beautifully.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, the technique that you at least tried for, J.I. Rodale used to suggest as edible landscaping. He said grow like 4 to 6 high bush blueberries relatively close together, and they would grow into an edible hedge that would have great fall color. And you say you plant, you know, they were all the same size when you bought them. Did you get them in a nursery or mail order?
Nursery.
Okay. And
same variety.
You said you put peat moss around them to keep the soil
and
acidic.
Soil, and I mulched them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple of things I can think of which I'm sure you've thought of them. Have you noticed any bite marks on them? Is there any chance?
No, I have checked. There's no animals at them.
But they get equal amounts of sun.
Oh, yes, equal amounts of sun. Yeah, and I watered them.
They get a lot of sun.
Yeah.
The ground is the same. Now, how long have they been in the ground again?
I would say a good 4 years.
Okay, and you said something about feeding them. What are you feeding them?
I give them Polytone.
Okay, so to give
which
them...
Which is an acidifier.
Right, give them food and keep their soil acidic. Yeah, that's a nice natural fertilizer. I'll add that even though you know more than I do, that anytime you use a granular fertilizer like that, it works much better if you cover it with soil after you put it around the plants.
Mm-hmm. At the opposite end was a was a blue boy holly.
Right, right. I have
and
that plant.
And at the other end is a Korean Miss Kim lilac.
Okay. And does the Miss Kim bloom nicely for you?
Some years it does, yes. It kind of rests some years, and some years it blooms nicely, yeah.
Okay. You sure this area is getting a ton of sun?
It starts getting the morning sun, I would say, about 11, 10:30, 11.
Okay. No, that's late in the game for the Miss Kim lilac. Lilacs really like morning sun, and
right.
And blueberries are really sun hogs. I would suggest that this is just an area, a little microclimate that's not getting as much sun as the others. And I would take Sick Little Willie, if he's otherwise looking okay, and put him in an area that might be a little less crowded where he's getting more sun. And I suggest he might even catch up to the others. When you tell me your lilac isn't blooming reliably every year, with your skills, that could only be lack of sun. And when you say that the sun doesn't arrive until midday, that's it. That's guaranteed. You must have a good hand to keep the lilac alive, because you know what drama queens they are.
Okay.
All right, Marlene?
Well, thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Delaware Home Show at the Chase Center in Wilmington at 1 and 3 o'clock today, and then at noon and 2 tomorrow, Sunday, March 3rd. And the famed Philadelphia International Flower Show opens today and runs through Sunday, March 10th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. I'll deliver my annual lecture at the Flower Show at 1 o'clock this coming Wednesday, March 6th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with your path to a weed-free summer and more of your fascinating phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, a technique called the stale seed bed, where you'll spend a little bit of time outside in the spring when you want to be there, and then spend no time pulling weeds in the summertime when you want to be inside in the air conditioning or lounging in the pool. You won't want to miss it. And you won't. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Jonathan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am just fine, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. Historic Bethlehem. The little town that years ago decided to keep its historic district and really struck gold by doing
so. It's beautiful up here. It's really nice.
All right. What can we do for Jonathan in historic Bethlehem, PA, the Christmas city?
Yeah, well, I'm up on the south side, and I have some space to use. I'm going to be gardening for my second year here, doing some vegetable gardens.
Okay.
I would like to start with seeds this year, and I wanted to know how you feel about doing a winter sow for the seeds. I'm probably going to do them in little milk jugs and put them outside. And so what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's there's no PETA group that's going to show up and protest you, the equivalent of, People for the Ethical Treatment of Plants. But were there such a group, they'd probably be calling for your head on a platter. What kind of seeds did you intend to kill this way, John?
Tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're calling the Red Cross. They're calling for lawyers and chocolate.
Well, I heard that's a great way to start them, and they become more hardy in the summer.
Well, yes and no. They'll be dead long before the summer. Now, when were you, so you're thinking of putting seeds in the ground?
No. It's you take a milk jug, clean it out,
right?
Put some seed starting mixture in there,
right?
Cut the container in half, put some seeds in there, then you tape it back up and leave it outside in the sun and a little bit of rain. And you kind of cut holes in the bottom so the rain goes through, and it kind of winters over, and when it starts to get warmer, it's like a little greenhouse in there.
Well, you know, the seeds of some tomatoes do survive that way. Cherry tomatoes are famous for being able to overwinter outdoors, mostly because those seeds need to go through a fermentation process that seed companies do professionally, but this kind of mimics it. The problem being, you'll probably get a warm day, and the seeds will begin to germinate, and then you know what's going to happen. It's going to drop down to 16 that night, and they're not going to make it. At best, you would lose a lot of vigor from the plant. At worst, you would be having plants that would be sprouting and then dying and needing to be replaced if you even noticed that they had come and gone that quickly. It might, under perfect conditions, with you paying really close attention and bringing them in on cold nights once anything started and the weather in your favor, it might work with tomatoes. It would not work with the other warm season crops you mentioned.
Okay.
What would be wrong with your just going out and buying a nice shop light with 2 4-foot-long tubes and starting them inside the old-fashioned dependable way where they can grow up with good strength and vigor?
I guess not much other than the small investment.
Well, it's the investment is going to put your starts in front of you where you're going to see them every day, and you can keep them really close to the light. And you can bring them into the world good and strong. And then the issue you're worried about, which is transplant shock or, going out into the cold world, suddenly that's better handled by a technique called hardening off. After your plants come up out of the ground, and then 6 weeks after that, you can begin taking them outside for a couple of hours a day. And you do this progressively for 4 or 5 days. And then if the nights are going to stay reliably in the 50s, you can leave them outside overnight. Then when you see that our nights are going to reliably stay in the 50s, plant them in the ground. But don't plant them in the morning. Plant them in the evening. This is great for relieving transplant shock, because when you plant them in the morning, a lot of times you get a hot, sunny day, and that combination with the transplant shock decimates them. But hardened off plants that are planted in the evening are off to the absolute best start you can give them. And the other technique just seems extremely dicey to me. But if you want to do it, if you want to do it just to have fun, because gardening should be fun, just stick to tomato seeds, because it's not going to work with those other crops.
Okay. Now, should I do direct sow? I'm doing 6 crops this year. Lettuce, carrots, and peas will be the other ones. I'll be doing direct sow with those in the spring.
You just have to make sure the soil temperature is warm enough for germination. I start all my first runs of lettuce indoors under lights, transplant the young plants outside. They can go out at a very young age, and once they're plants, they don't mind cold weather. And the secret to peas is to pre-sprout them inside a few days in advance in moist paper towels and then take them outside. Because you have to remember that soil has to be a certain temperature for germination, no matter how much cold weather the adult plant can take.
Okay.
All right, man?
Thank you very much.
All right, have fun.
You too.
1-888-346-9499. Dave, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And where is Dave great?
In Pittsgrove, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you, sir?
I've had trouble with bagworms over the last year or two. I've tried different methods, and I have to admit that I actually used pesticides that killed them temporarily, but they came back, and now they're coming back with a vengeance.
Yeah, I doubt you actually killed any of them. You probably took some years off your own life. But these creatures that form nests that look remarkably like pine cones that blend in to the evergreens they attack, those nests are impervious to any kind of spray.
Okay.
Now, what kind of evergreens are they on?
They're on Scotch pine trees. We get our Christmas trees every year. We buy ball trees and put them in the ground.
Oh, good for you.
Our property. Yeah. And they seem to be attacking them.
Okay. Now, you planted these trees yourself then?
Yes.
Did you remove all the wrappings when you planted the trees?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
All the wrapping off.
And you planted the tree nice and high?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you feeding them? Are you mulching them?
I do put some compost I have around them.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And you haven't fed them or mulched them with anything different?
No.
That's unusual, Dave, that they would be attacked by this pest. I've mostly seen them going after weakened trees, and the trees are getting good sun.
Yeah, we have farmlands. They have open sunlight.
This is all very good. This is all very good. Now, it's very important that, especially like over the winter, any bags that you can personally reach, that you prune them off the tree. Have you done this? Have you done physical removal?
Yeah, we've taken them off the tree at times. Sometimes we don't get all of them, but then
no,
the next year they come back.
It's very difficult to get all of them. You should prune off as many as you can reach, and I mean prune them off. You want to go back beyond where it's attached, because their silken cords that they spin to attach the bags to the tree are so strong, they'll girdle that branch. That branch will not grow anymore. You know, it's like Spider-Man. They have these incredible powers for their size. So in a couple of months, they're going to be emerging. The next generation is going to be emerging from their bags. And I want you to be ready with the biological insecticide BT, the letter B and the letter T, like Bobby Thomas.
Okay.
You'll find this at any large independent garden center. You'll find it online. You'll find it under brand names like Dipel, Thoracide, and Greenstep. This stuff has been around for at least 50 years. It's a naturally occurring soil organism, and it doesn't harm anything in the environment except caterpillars who chew on the sprayed leaves. So you're going to want to talk to your local county extension office, and you're going to want to get their best idea of the emergence times when the little caterpillars are out feeding. Or, because BT harms nothing else in the environment, once the weather warms up, you can just spray the trees with BT like every 10 days from early spring through early summer, and that'll take care of them. As soon as the young ones start to try to feed on your new greenery, their stomachs will stop working and they will die. You'll break the cycle completely. And the BT is very inexpensive. It's been around forever, and it is totally effective. You know, conventional pesticides would also have some effect, but again, it's the window that's important. know, when they, the only time you can get to them is when they're out of the bags, and that's early in the spring. And again, your local, and I mean local, your local county extension office should be able to narrow that window down for you. But by then, I want you to have the BT in hand. I want you to have the sprayer ready. I'd rather you start spraying a week or two early, especially if spring starts being warm, so that it's out there and on the leaves, and then, boom, it'll be over after this season. You'll break the cycle completely.
Awesome. Okay. I will do that, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Dave.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care, sir. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. The stale seedbed, your path to a weed-free garden. You Bet Your Garden producer, Alexis Landis, please read off this week's intriguing question.
And that it is. We heard from Carol in Bordentown, New Jersey, who writes, "My significant other and I are at odds when it comes to weeding. I am a weeder, and he is not, though he thinks he is. I remove weeds down to the roots and then loosely rake the area to loosen up any remaining roots I may have missed. My better half uses the grab-and-yank method, leaving many roots in the ground. Then he tosses what he rips out over the fence, scattering any seeds the weeds may have developed to regrow and blow back over into our garden. He insists they don't regenerate, and I don't see how they can't. Now, he is an avid composter, organic through and through, and I love him dearly. But it has gotten to the point where we can't be in the yard at the same time while I'm weeding because he'll offer to help. Mike, please set one or both of us straight on weeding."
Well, of course you're correct. Some perennial weeds can regrow from even the tiniest of roots left in the ground. And his, quote, fence tossing is like hiring the ghost of Johnny Appleseed to spread fresh chickweed in your yard every season. But your technique isn't perfect. When you, quote, rake the area to loosen up any remaining roots, you could be triggering dormant weed seeds to sprout a week or two later. When pulling weeds, you should always soak the soil thoroughly, reach down low, and pull gently. Slow pulling from drenched soil gets all the roots out. But you got the right basic idea, and he is a weed's best friend. So you get a B+ and he gets an F-. But there is a much better way to deal with weeds. One that gets 90% of a full season's worth of unwanted plants out of the way early in the spring so that you can spend hot summer days pulling on a cold brew or a ceiling fan chain instead of dandelion roots. It's called the stale seedbed technique, and it takes the worst aspects of tilling and turns it on its head. Tilling causes weeds. Yes, it loosens up the soil, but it also exposes to sunlight the 200 to 54,000 dormant weed seeds lurking in every square foot of garden soil. That sun exposure begins the process of germination. The diligent tiller reburies the seeds, waters them, and maybe even feeds them. Then the diligent tiller is shocked to be overrun by weeds a month later. The diligent tiller should instead be proud of those weeds. They were probably planted better than the tomatoes are going to be. That's why I preach the gospel of raised beds. When you grow in defined areas that are no wider than 4 feet, so you can reach the center of the bed without stepping into it, you won't have to step into the bed during the growing season, the soil won't become compacted, and you won't have to till again. Just add some fresh compost to the surface of the bed every season. And when those beds are raised 6 inches to a foot above the surrounding surface, grassy weeds can't creep in from the sides. But it is good to till the soil to loosen it up before you build those beds. So here's the plan. Till up the soil in your growing area and then mark off 4 foot wide sections with 2 foot wide walking lanes in between them, whether you intend to grow in raised beds or not. If you are going to build raised beds, you smart person, you, construct them now. Then level out the growing areas and water them for 20 minutes every morning. After 10 days to 2 weeks, all of the weed seeds you till planted will be up and growing. walking only in your well-defined lanes, use a razor-sharp hoe to slice the baby weeds off at the soil line, being careful not to disturb the soil when you do this. Let the decapitated weeds lie there on the surface to decay, feed the soil, and be a visible warning to other bad plants. Cover the walking lanes with a single layer of cardboard with 2 to 4 inches of wood chips or shredded bark on top to keep weeds down over there. Now, ideally, you should wait a few more days to see if any late bloomers emerge in the beds. And if they do, off with their heads as well. And that's it. Doesn't matter if those weeds were annuals or perennials. Cutting their little heads off at that young an age does them in. You now have beds that are stale of weed seeds and a pull-free summer ahead. If you're going to direct sow things like lettuce and peas, sow the seeds on the surface of your stale seed bed and cover them with a little compost or screened topsoil. When you dig holes for plants, immediately mulch around the newly installed plants with shredded leaves or pine straw. Keep a 1 to 2 inch mulch on the surface during the growing season and over the winter, and few to none your weeds will be. Well, that sure was some useful information about stopping yourself from planting weeds now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over with links to lots more information about raised beds and garden mulches. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to till my turnips if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email and your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check Voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems just like yours in our Garden Answers A to Z section. Listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook, where we post new content every day. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is WHYY senior engineer Fred Snyder. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminati. Our social media director Amanda McGrath is weed free. Ace production assistant Brett Rader is well mulched. Never tilled is our esteemed editor Al Banks. Sharp as the shiniest garden blade is Alexis Landis, who proudly produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm stale Mike McGrath. Hey, at least it keeps the weeds away. And I'll see you next week. Having your soil tested can be very helpful, but the recommendations that come with the tests are often toxic. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll explain your organic lawn and garden options, plus your fabulous phone calls.